हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहना भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
ओके न्याय सूत्रस् Sutra 113, page 15. Perception, inference, comparison, and verbal testimony. These are the means of correct knowledge, pramanas. Riti, setting the question of pramana is complicated by the fact that among Indians' philosophical schools, there exist a total of 10 pramanas, or proofs. Each philosophical school recognizes a certain combination of these as valid and presents arguments to support their opinion. The various types of pramana are listed in Anambhata's Tarka Sangraha, among other places, and summarized here as follows. Well, that was the 10 types of pramana. 1. Pratyaksha, direct perception. Pratyaksha, or sense perception, is defined in Śrīla Bāladeva Vidyabhūṣaṇa's Vedanta Śyāmataka 1.2 as Indriyārtha Shani Karshe Pratyaksham, the means of knowing the world outside ourselves through direct contact of the senses with their objects. This produces an experience, but is that experience knowledge? That's a very good point. So that's his point. Because you get it, because it'll take it, I saw it, it's fact. But you saw it, you got an experience. So is that fact? Because in that you can see is that if you take, let's say you have 10 people, or even, you know, just a whole bunch of people, and you have you know, take them to see one particular thing, and then go back from that thing, and sit down and or even better, individually then meet with them afterwards and talk to them about that thing, you'll see that they saw 10 different things. So it produces an experience based on your samskaras, because that's how the mind will work. It brings in information. It depends on the memory of the samskaras. Then it will analyze. It won't. It doesn't start, because if you don't have anything, you don't see. You know, it's just like, let's say, if you go into a place and let's say you have a background of organization, you'll look and see how it's organized. You know, somebody else that's, you know, the aesthetics of how it's done, they'll see those things. Someone else will see, you know, how much that would cost, how many, like this. And so then they won't see the other things. They can't see them because there's no samskara there. You know? So that's the thing, as then he's pointing out, that this produces an experience. You know, so that's the samskara. It's not the fact. It may have in facts included in it, but you only take those facts that support the experience. So is it actually knowledge? Right? Directly perceiving something can be the means to either valid pramana, prama, or invalid aprama knowledge. But only that sense perception which leads to valid knowledge should be considered pramana. Right? Because just because you saw it, unless it comes in lines with the scriptures, and it supports that, means the scriptures say this, and you see that with your senses, then you can say that's pramana. Direct perception of two types, external, bahya, and internal, manasa. An external perception occurs when we acquire knowledge through the external senses. Each of the five jñānendriyas, or knowledge-acquiring senses, has its own proper kind of object. Visible form for the sense of light, the feel of things for the sense of touch, and so on. an internal perception, the mind further processes the perception of the five senses through the process of logic and reasoning. Footnote 12. In the Bhagavad Gita 5.17, Krishna lists the mind as the 16th sense, mana shastan indriyani. Right? So then, what the senses saw, but the point is that's the external, what's there, but then you're going to take it and process it. So then, unless that comes in line with Shastra, it's not considered Praman. So, if it's in line with Shastra, you'll consider it Praman, but the difficulty comes is that you have to always start with Shastra. It's dependent on Shastra. Two, Anuman, logical inference. Anuman literally means knowing after. It is defined as the cognition or knowledge that follows from some other knowledge. Right? You have some knowledge, and then what follows after that. Anuman is thus the process of knowing something, not by means of contact between the senses and sense object, but rather through the medium of a sign, linga, that is invariably related to it. Right? You have the sense object, then there's something connected with that, that identifies that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Inference involves the process of analyzing memories, generalized experiences, correlations, and uncontaminated arguments. So when he said he was being very general, it was anuman. It was a logical inference. Yeah. 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 And uncontaminated arguments. It was purely unbiased, based on he saw one he saw them, but that didn't matter because being broad-minded, he can accommodate any kind of things like that. But when he saw that they were hesitant to go over the bridge, and when they didn't, they fell off. And then after that, no one came again. Then he understood from that, from the second thing. Then he understood the first. So that's anuman.
We worked this out earlier.
Yes.
It's all related.
Yes, it's all related. Based on repeated experience or authoritative verbal testimony, one arrives at some general principle called vyapti. Right. So then from that you get to a general principle. You know, you just like that. Invariable concomitance. So that means it brings things together, and it doesn't have any variable. It always stays the same, right? The guys don't like exercise, things like that. Invariable concomitance, you know, like that. One can then apply this principle in specific cases to deduce unknown facts, because it's something that always works. Then you can apply it into a situation, you know. But then, in applying it to the situation, if it doesn't apply, then you have to see what has to be adjusted until it does apply. Right? So that would be the process of tarka, right? There is a systematic method for testing the validity of inferential knowledge. For there are always some inseparable constituents to an inference. And if any of these parts are missing or defective, then the knowledge inferred is invalid. Right? So there's some parts of it, some elements of it, and they are inseparable. It means they're just part of the process, you know, of that thought pattern. Right? So then if that's there, then you know it's good. Does that make sense? Means you've had, let's say, just for example, you've had something, you've had a nice preparation. It looked nice, it smelled nice, it tasted nice. So then you can connect that the looking and the tasting, smell is connected, at least the smell is connected. Right? Because generally you've seen it like that, but you've had occasion where things didn't necessarily look so good, but they tasted all right. Right? Or they looked all right, but didn't taste good. Right, but you know that the smell is proper, the taste will be proper. So then, when you get another prep, it smells nice. Then you can conclude it will taste nice. Does that make sense? So you have a generalization, and then you apply it to the specific. Is that okay? Yeah, getting closer to breakfast. Right? The ancient Nyaya school of the sage Gautama. Huh?
Shabda?
You have to start from the Shabda, third form.
How did I get down there? Okay. Shabda, verbal testimony. Shabda, in the literal sense, means words or sound. As a pramana, it refers to meaningful, articulate statements verbalized by an apta purusha. Meaningful, articulate statements. Okay. Yes, then you would start from there and give your class, right? A trustworthy person who is an authority on the matter in question. Because of that statement of Shabda, which acts as proof, there will be acquisition of knowledge. You know, like Rabban gives the examples that you hear from hear from the mother, or you hear from the father. You probably said, what's this? And the father says, oh, this is a watch. So now, without knowing really what a watch is or how it works, so this he can say that's a watch. So that's the point of the Shabda. The ancient Nyaya school of the sage Gautama defines the verbal means of acquiring correct knowledge as apta-vakya, the words of reliable authorities. Aptas are defined as persons who speak and act the way they think. Therefore, you could only find those who... Yes, because they have to act the way they think. But you find most of the time that those who talk a lot of this, like politically correct, they talk the one thing, but their actions are very different. They talk all inclusive, but they actually only work within a very narrow environment. So then those statements can't be authoritative. But you see, those that work on things of tradition, then they say those things because those have been handed down. And all that, they say something that it would have more of a meaning. If they're living it, they value it, they live it. And then there's also, because they live it, then if you can show them something further, they're more likely to take it. Because they're living it, and they see how what you say will apply. Well, the person who speaks one thing and lives another, then what you speak, he doesn't. What they speak, they don't apply. Why would they apply what you speak? Right? And so, hence, new speak. Right? That gives rise to. So those who don't live what they speak, that speaking is called new speak.
So it's not about the application, they know that it's about all out, they don't apply it.
No, they don't apply it like that. It means you're supposed to apply it, then they get their particular, you know, socio-economic, political gain. It means you do it, they're not going to do it. Why would they do it? Such persons' minds, actions, and speech are in perfect harmony, and they are therefore accepted as authorities. Thus, their verbal or written testimonies are considered to be valid sources of knowledge. There are two main ways of classifying shabda, or testimony. The first method of classification divides testimonial knowledge into two categories based on the nature of the object and of the knowledge. There we don't need that the nature of the object of knowledge. Okay. The first category consists of the trustworthy assertions of ordinary persons, saints, sages, and scriptures on matters related to the perceptible objects of the world. The second type of testimony consists of the trustworthy assertions of persons, saints, sages, and scriptures on matters concerning the supersensible realities, means what's beyond the senses. So there's the testimony of ordinary persons, saints, sages, and scriptures on matters related to what you see in this world, and then they dropped off the ordinary persons into at least trustworthy assertions. They move up a touch there. You know, what's beyond. What's beyond the reality, what you can't see.
So it's parana-para.
Basically, isn't it? Parana-para. The second way of classifying Shabda is based on the nature of the source of the knowledge. Because it's the nature of the knowledge.
Yeah.
It's not general. It's not general. It's specific. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's of the knowledge, meaning whether it's material or spiritual. Okay. It's based on the nature of the source of the knowledge. This method categorizes all testimony as being either scriptural or secular. Here the word scriptural refers only to the sacred writings related to the Veda and to the Veda itself. The words of the scriptural testimony are considered to be perfect and infallible. Secular shabda is the testimony of fallible human beings and therefore may be either true or false. Secular testimony that comes from a trustworthy person is valid, but the rest is not. Okay. The nature of the knowledge of material is spiritual, and it's not so much about the people saying it. And the second one is specifically who's saying it. Where does it originate?
It is very interesting, Maharaj, that they make it so personal. It's the criteria is who is saying it.
Yes.
The answer is not so much what has been said.
That's it. It's who's saying it. Yeah, that's why then when we hear, when Prabhupada says something that appears to contradict our experience, then you have to figure out how to see it the way he saw it or explained it, because he's seeing it according to the way the acharyas and the scriptures are explaining.
We see now because of the internet, like you see quote, if longer you don't know who is saying, so first you go down, see who is saying, then you might consider reading it.
Reading or not, yeah, whether you want to spend the time. Yeah.
Well, there's the problem with social media, that you get so many quotes there, and it looks like the quote from Prabhupada and the quote from... It appears on the same spot online, so they are kind of...
It's taken as...
Like,
yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, Prabhupada said that, or this one said that?
No, it's because one has to know the difference. So therefore the Shabda is being, you have material and spiritual knowledge, but then you have who's saying it. It means anybody who's an authority you can take in there. So if you're talking on something material, and those who, you know, it appears that they have some authority or knowledge in that experience in that area, within that context of how it mechanically works, you could take their knowledge. But what its actual ultimate purpose, you can't get from them. This point that's splitting it is that, okay, let's say I remember seeing before, say, brought in somebody when it was very much the, I think it was in the 90s. So some wallah, because they got into the political correctness and also into the success kind of things. They brought in one of these kind of success gurus. A guy with a ponytail, so it was a bit, metro and upbeat and whatever it is, having a correct left-leaning, perspective. I don't know if he followed any of the four regulative principles. I mean, well, he's here in Mayapur, then of course he'll be at least as much as we know, But, he came and addressed the GBC and gave some pointers and this and that they thought were, had some value to it. And so, that he comes in as someone who knows a particular aspect of the material energy, and he's experienced in it and proven himself, and he comes in and gives you some of that, and then from that you take that and then contemplate it. Okay, fine. But you should not think that because he's speaking and giving advice to the GBC, now I can ask him about my life in Krishna consciousness. That's then where the problem comes up. Is that, yes, he has in this field, but that doesn't mean that if they're using Prabhupada says this, and we see even that point, even other great personalities in history have also accepted, and they start quoting from well-known people and showing how what they're saying is in line with what Prabhupada said. And so these are practical people, successful people. So that means then that, the Vedas are actually giving the real practical. You don't need to go to these people. Then that way then you can put the quotes in together. But if it's just Prabhupada said this and that one said that and this, what's the point? Four, Arsha, opinions of sages. Arsha refers to statements of authoritative sages or demigods. There are many exceptional sages, such as Kapila, Gautama, Patanjali, who founded schools of philosophy. Since these philosophers are all profound thinkers, their utterances are taken seriously. But an ordinary person can hardly determine which philosopher's opinion is conclusive. The Vaishnava is the criterion for judging whether a person, whether a particular Arsha opinion is valid, is whether it conforms to Aparusheya Shabda Pramana. Right? So we will include this. You can see it's there. So the Acharyas said, I mean, not the Acharyas, the sages said this, and so it can be taken. But we'll only see it in the context of Shabda. So we already count this Arsha is part of Shabda. But it's still, it has to be in line with Scripture. So Scripture is the ultimate. And then from that, then you have, you know, assertations, ordinary persons, saints, sages, scriptures, trustworthy assertions of persons. We'll see all that in line with Shastra. If it's in line with Shastra, we'll accept it. If it's not, then we don't care. Does that make sense? So that's the... Five, upamana, comparison. Upamana means analogy or comparison. It is a conclusion reached by knowledge of similarity, analyzed according to one's previous impressions. Suppose there is an object which we have never encountered. By upamana, one can assign to it a particular name since it has been compared to a familiar object. Right? The followers of Nyaya cite the example of the Gavaya. So avayavas and gavayas. Wild forest cows. Someone explains to a city dweller that a gavaya is like a cow. On seeing a cow-like animal in the forest, the person recognizes it and says, this cow-like animal is a gavaya. Gava?
Yep.
Gava. Now I'm saying that. So in other words, it means what the Dominic called blue cows.
New guy.
Yeah. You've seen?
Yeah. There are many now.
Oh, there's another, they're up again. Because
around Govardhan now, many.
Oh, okay. Because you used to see them when you go into from Chatikar into go to, that's where you'd see a lot of them. That's all built up.
They don't look like cows.
Yeah, they look like more like them.
They're kind of deer.
Yeah, like a deer. Like big sized deer.
Yeah. Maybe it's the big size because only deers are skinny.
Yeah.
Just fat.
Little horns. I mean, yeah. Really nice. They're not blue, they like a gray kind of color.
That's blue-gray. Because when you add blue, then it'll start getting gray.
Yeah.
If you put enough blue, it'll get black. So. Okay. The followers of Nyayas... Oh, we saw that. Okay. So we see as Gautama accepts this as the fourth. And so while we're going through, we'll be using it because he's shown how each section of the Panchangadhyaya is connected with the Praman. He's the first four. Because the last one is connected with the first one. So that's you can say your Shabda like that, and so then it comes down to that.
I heard about Asha, that This also includes utterances like statements of great personality that we don't necessarily understand, but we still have to, we cannot reject them. We have to accept them because it comes from great personality.
Well, unless it comes in line with the scriptures for us, then it's not important. They may say, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to care about that.
Well, the devotee was giving an example of Prabhupada. Prabhupada was quoting sometimes these verses from Gita in his own way.
But you can't use, they can't take this Arsha and apply that on Prabhupada. He's representing the Parampara. So so then that would be here. Sages means like here. It gives the example. Authority of sages. Kapila, Gautama, Patanjali, you know. Like, yeah, it means, in other words, let's say, from Gautama, the process of logic we'll accept from him, but using it as a philosophical basis, and that we won't, you know. Or how the mind progresses through the different stages of meditation. So everybody will quote from Yoga Shastra on that. You know, these the what are they called? I don't remember. No. But it basically means occasionally thinking about, more regularly thinking about, steadily thinking about, you know, then completely, you know, dhyan, samadhi, and then there's three other ones. Like that. I don't remember, but there's ones that Acharyas use them. It's the same thing. It's just, you know, so in that area, they're accepted, but everything else is left. Mm-hmm. Like that. But we're taking what matches, what does. What Prabhupada says, it is matching. So he's not in this category that some things you take, some things you don't. And if you do, then, you know, that's fine if you haven't surrendered the process and taken initiation. But once you take initiation, you won't use this. You know, if in the beginning you like, okay, Swami, you like the kirtan and you like the prasad, but, you know, you don't like anything else, okay, then that's fine. Just continue with that. But with time, you have to... So he's not Arsha, opinion of sages, because that's the point. It's an opinion of a sage. But we're talking about the absolute truth here. Yes?
In the connection that there is a difference between a fact and a truth, fact becomes truth, absolute truth, to us only when there is a relationship. Mm. As long as the relationship is not established, the avideya is not established, it's not an absolute truth for us. It still remains a fact because the jiva dynamically getting involved makes it. So the point is, an opinion can be expressed by anybody, but if it is not connected to a Purusha Shabda, it doesn't relate, like there is no way how you can relate to it. And it can never become absolute truth.
Yeah, because that was the point of that Nyaya Panchanana made, is that the Abhideya is not given. It just says, you know, this is how you logically think. It can remove ignorance, and by removing ignorance you get that, but it doesn't show the process how you are going to apply that in your life. Okay, so fact you see, but until it matches Shastra, then you apply it that way. That's why then also Arsha is someone who is applying. So that's also is that even theirs, when it says, it has to be that what they say and how they live matches. Does that make sense? At least the endeavor, you know, they're trying for that.
And the context in which we apply Arsha is about objects which we don't have a definite knowledge on. So there is no point that you can compare with something else because it's already unknown in the field of... If you say he is the authority in that field, means you don't know the knowledge and he's the one who knows it. And it's not for us to, like, you know, start speculating on it, because where is the point from where you take the speculation?
Okay.
Can you say, Maharaj, maybe I'm all alone, but I see it now a lot. It's quite often, and especially when devotees, they quote from, you know, classics, this, that. And they quote whatever is in line with whatever they experience. So it means it makes it, their pramana is pratyaksha, it's not arsha. Because if it doesn't make sense to you and you didn't experience that, whatever this so-called after said, it might be that he's right. But if you think he's right, it means that your command is pratyaksha.
Can
you say that?
Yeah, you could. Or they brought that point of arsha to pratyaksha, just like what they shoved into that. But its basis means...
Because if it's just for general knowledge, it's not a problem. But it becomes more and more often that you see that those people are taking into consideration as an authority on many areas of our life. Whatever areas that we can see how Shastra covers it, how Srila Prabhupada specifically covers it.
So that use these people.
We bring in people.
But then it also, I say, we show their value system. Because then if it's there, because then it's okay, if they're going to be, what is their value? You know, what is the value of the person who said it, or where it's from? The classic, you know, it's like, you know, you have to just check just like, let's take the two. Of the two, probably if Bilbo said it, you know his lifestyle and what he says basically matches. But Frodo, you don't generally see it necessarily go that far. Kind of at the end, you start to see his character and all that. But it's more based on you know, following the footsteps of Bilbo. So unless it's... Does this make sense?
I think it's classic.
It is classic.
Of course it's classic.
Don't offend.
You want something from Beowulf or something. Okay. So, okay. Grendel's mother then, is grumpy, and you make noise that makes her more grumpy, and so then she'll show up at your program unannounced. So therefore, if you know you're surrounded by grumpy neighbors, don't do things that makes them more grumpy, or like Grendel's mother showed up, then you might have, unless you invited all the people you don't like to the party and then made the noise, so Grendel's mother came and got rid of everybody. Now that would be clever political move. Just make sure that you're somehow or another, you had to step out for something. Is that far enough back? Or Gilgamesh, maybe? Okay.
Also, Maharaj, the logic establishes us to distinguish between valid knowledge, invalid knowledge, and finally brings us to the stage that Shabda is the only independent Praman. And it more or less in one sense stops there. Now you have a shelter to take, which is the Shabda Praman, and more or less stops there. Now the problem comes in, there is like vast knowledge given by Shabda. Now, which you consider and which you not, and that's where the Dharma Shastras are about. So then the Mimamsa Sutras establish the order so that how you can function together with sometimes one statement may seem contrary to other. So then Mimamsa Sutras then apply the superiority of which goes first and which goes next. It's not that something is invalid. Both are valid, but which, like, you know, already hierarchy, which already includes the other one, or which goes first, which goes later, like that. And then, using all that, then one needs to understand the Vedanta, because ultimately it's meant for going higher beyond Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. So, in the context of what Mataji was expressing about taking proper statements, and if we don't go in this order, then obviously then we may use Dharma for our Artha, then we go in the reverse order.
So then so you're not taking it up, that means you may bring it to the point where it's valid, but you're not taking it back to Shabda, is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. Does that make sense? It may be that it's something that you can say as a fact or something, but the point is does it go back, does it support the Shastra? So then you have to see what's the value of the person who's quoting that, and also, as we were saying before, it's a lifestyle. What's the value and lifestyle of the person who said it? Does that make sense? You know, so like say someone like Einstein, you might quote something from Einstein, but he made it, you know, he would always talk about that he's got, you know, he believes in God, and he's, as a scientist, he's just studying the glory of God's creation. So then if he says something about, you know, the creation and his wonderfulness, you know, connection with God, then you could more take it that it has more of a validity, because in that way he would be an opta, you know, up to his point. But unless that's seen in context of the scriptures, then it only then it takes on its real point. You'd have to see that there's a match there, because otherwise people say all kinds of stuff, but you have to make sure is that you didn't pull out something that you wanted that was speculative, rather than something that was realized from how you live. But I would have a tendency not to do that. So the Prabhupada does quote here and there, but he doesn't make it as the comment. So, you know, unless you're talking to a very specific group, like let's say you go to a group of people who play golf or something, and you're speaking at their program, so then you might, you know, quote from some of their great golfers of ancient times, usually like Tiger Woods or something, mm-hmm. you know, like that, or, you know, some old Scottish dude or something. So, you know, then you might throw in a few of those, but you still have to bring it in line with the Shastra. One has to be careful of that. Otherwise, if you said something, that was what I said before, you might have said something that's in line with Prabhupada said, or the scripture said, but that doesn't mean not everything he says is in line. So that's why there's the point of the opinion. Once it is an opinion, that's left. If it's in line with Shastra. In other words, Shastra says all these different things. Of that, Gotama analyzes and focuses on the area of logic. He's caught that, you know, you have to be logical, because it's mentioned in the Shastra. So then he takes that part only. And he's taking it from Shastra, and so then it will have validity. But at the same time is that the goal of it is simply liberation. That's not what, for us, it's developing a relationship with Krishna. You know? And for the sake of seeing how the Panchanga Nyaya works, then yes, the Upamana, the comparison, will be used. But we'll see it in line how it supports Shabda. Like that. So we will, it'll go inside there. It won't stay as a fourth one. So we're saying, we'll use these things, but we don't. So as long as you're talking logic, then that fourth one can be there. But we know that it's actually, you know, unless it's, it'll be something like Prabhupada said, all his examples are from the scriptures. You know, the one about the sun, the sunshine, the sun globe, the sun god, you know, or
the roots of the tree is from Bhagavatam.
Rules of three.
The roots of the tree.
Oh, the roots of the tree.
It's from Bhagavatam.
Yeah. Also the rule of three.
Yeah.
Because Krishna is as Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out, because Krishna also, there's a name for Krishna that means it's about three, like Sambandhavi Deya Trayosh, it's called Trayi.
Ah, yeah.
You know, and because Krishna is Sachi Ananda, that's why everything is in three. You know, so that's the,
yeah.
You know, so then, so indirectly you brought up. No Tolstoy? Okay. You can, but then once you get that and they catch it, then immediately come back into and explain again from the Shastras. Because that's you see, is that's the whole idea of the Upanaya, is that they didn't catch it. And so then means they don't catch how it applies in Krishna consciousness, but they may understand the logic you're using, but then, and then you quote from you know, one of their authorities. When they catch that, then they've caught it. Now the drishtantas happen. Now you show that drishtanta or that understanding God. Now, similarly, in Krishna consciousness is this, and then try to show the connections where it all matches. So you can do that. They don't catch it. Then. I mean, that so many times you say something, no one catches it, and then you say some line or some scene from a film or something, and then that, oh yeah, of course, yeah. Then what's it? Then you go back into the what you were doing. So you can use it. Sorry? No, generally not. Only now and again, if everyone looks at you,
what?
Yeah. Oh, wow, that was good. That was good. Because always in the past, when I bring something, they actually tried to get me to tell the story. No, but this guy said, you don't tell the whole story. So, oh, yeah, it's gonna be big. Yeah. Wait a minute. Okay. Then, artapatti, presumption. Artapatti is up to means you see shabda and then upamana. We'll accept up to shabda, the first three. Gautama accepts the fifth one without the fourth one, because he'll just take that as part of shabda, yeah, like we would also. Now, after this, these will be the ones that we may use, but we won't count them as separate.
Part of
the first. It may be used as a subsection of it to establish something, as a technique, but we won't take that as the authority itself. Like that. So artapatti, presumption. Artapatti is hypothetical inference or a presumptive testimony. This means we make an assumption based on a fact that is otherwise inexplicable. For example, Devadatta does not eat in the day, but still he is fat. Therefore, presumably, he must eat at night. It could not be so otherwise. Yeah, well, it's always Devadatta. He's like in, I don't know, at least in the English world, John Doe.
Oh,
yeah. Just nobody has the, Mr. Smith or, like that. It's just the ordinary. So in the Vedic, it's Devadatta.
I thought it was because of Devadatta's argument is Kachal. And Kachal's on the ground in fact.
Oh, yeah. He must be definitely eating at night, right? Like that.
Is there
Kachal
or someone else's
Devadatta? Panchajanya. Then somebody's Pandrika. Then right. Devadatta. I think it mentions all the Pandavas.
Yeah.
I don't remember. Remember, Shloka doesn't be there. Dhananjaya. Yes, you're right.
Okay, yes.
Devadatta Dhananjaya. Yeah. So that is presumption. You presume these things. So it could be, you could use it as a start for a tarka, but you wouldn't use it as authority. But this is very much used in the political field. It's like it's taken as a, because once you see, like you'll see, is that these ones that have come up now, is that in the modern world they use these all the time. And they take it as authority. You've said that, then it can't be otherwise. It's fact. Then if you try to argue it, then you're covering up. You're trying to rationalize. It's Arjuna's. Okay. Confirmed. Okay. 7. Abhava, non-cognition. Abhava or anupalabdhi means absence, non-cognition, or awareness of non-existence of an object, conspicuous by its absence. For example, one accepts that a pot does not exist at a certain place by not seeing the pot on the ground. It is classified as a separate category of perception because there is no actual contact between the sensual instrument and the object, as there would be in ordinary sensual perception. The senses cannot perceive what they do not come in touch with. What is perceived is the object's absence. Right, so it's also you're inferring. You don't see. It's also be a,
so
just a negative side.
So you don't have internet, so you say you don't have red light. That's the idea.
You don't have?
No, I'm just saying. Just a random example. For example, you come, you see there's no Wi-Fi here. I mean, you don't have internet. So you conclude you don't have Wi-Fi here. That's the thing.
Yeah. Yeah, like that. Whether it's the fact or not, or they've just got a really good system so no one else can even, let alone log in, you can't even trace it.
I don't know. But maybe it's
they have stuff
know,
like that?
There's no.
You can suppress it so that no one else can even see it's there?
Yeah,
there's a device for that.
Oh.
But here, just no lights.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Well, that wouldn't necessarily, because in the old Gurukul we didn't have lights. We only used lamps, but we had one electric line that came in and went into the back of the Elmira. You know the steel Elmiras?
Yeah.
You know the bottom shelf's really big. If you open the Elmira, on the bottom shelf was the whole computer set up. It wasn't these. It was a. You know, desktop with the whole tower, this, that, the whole, you know, it was up to date. And then you'd do that, and it was had internet and everything like that. And then when you closed it, it was just, again. But that was the only electricity that went to that.
So presumption would be, you don't see any electricity, you don't see any Wi-Fi around, so you presume that you don't have any.
Yeah.
Then if you open,
it's there.
It's never got to see.
Yeah, it would be the sixth artifact. So this is non-cognition, that there's no like that. It could also be, it's slightly different, it just means you don't sensually perceive it. The other one is kind of an anuman, but it's
Antapatti has an inference into it.
Oh, okay.
And this one, above, is just a category in pratyaksha. There's no need to think. You don't even think. It's not there. Like, you tell a chair, he doesn't find friend.
Yeah, he sits down and looks at the plate, it's empty. There's no lunch.
There is no need to think on it. That is
that. So but now if he says, so he goes, there's no lunch. So that's abhava, non-cognition. But he goes, there's no lunch, but the plate is here. That means there was something on it and someone else ate it. You know? And I don't see this person at the lunch, so that means they must have already eaten it. You know, therefore you run into the room and then hit him with the pillow.
Well, that's a presumption.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's
they start from above and they go into presumption. They go from the one into the other. Yeah, immediately. It's a simultaneous.
So from non-cognition into presumption.
Yes,
right,
yes.
Away.
What is it if you don't experience Ruchi, for example? So that means you don't hate it, and this will be this one, the last one.
Non-cognition. Well, that would be it. That means that would be what he was talking about, what Prabhu was talking about, is the litmus test. Because you know if you're chanting purely, then there'll be a taste, okay. Or it will come very quickly. So if you're not getting the taste, then that means that stability in that or that period. So therefore, there must be an anartha that's getting in the way of the taste. You know, I think Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about that. If there's not just on taste, but he says, if there's some aspect that's not advancing, then there's some anartha that's there, something serious that's not just from now. It's some deep thing from previous something. I think that was the same offenses. And so therefore, then you analyze that into back. You have to, trace it back. And then you see what that could be, and then you see if I am I doing that from this and that.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.